It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday morning. As you just heard in our newscast, results are in from yesterday's primary election races, and winners have been declared in all the key races in the region. The most recent news coming across the wires this morning is that the last undecided race, the 6th Congressional District GOP primary, has now been declared for Glenn Grothman over Joe Liebman, but by just over 200 votes, which will likely trigger a recount. And as is often the case in a midterm primary election, turnout was generally light in most parts of the state. Joining us this morning via phone to help us analyze the results is Julia Azari. She's an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, also the author of a recent book called Delivering the People's Message, The Changing Politics of the Presidential Mandate. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So your most recent book is about mandates, and maybe mandates are a good place to start, or maybe lack thereof. Turnout is never especially high in primary elections, but if you are a winning candidate, how much can you read into the attitude of the electorate when only a fifth of registered voters cast ballots?
I think it's very challenging to read into the electorate in any under any circumstances. And I also think that it's tough to do that in the context of the primary, where so much comes down to personalities and to advertising and to quirky idiosyncratic factors. But actually, I was just thinking that I thought that for a local election, turnout and interest in this one was actually pretty high. So that maybe tells us something about the state of American political participation at the local level.
Well, and in many ways, it's always like this, right? We hear that primary election candidates have to appeal to the party faithful and then often change their approach to appeal to a wider cross-section of voters in the fall.
Right. That's true in some contexts, for sure. And one place where we'll see that play out is the Wisconsin 6th, I think, to some extent. That's a conservative district, a Republican district, but we did see Grothman win that primary, and I think that in order to appeal to he's going to need to appeal to a much broader section of voters than some of his comments and issue positions would suggest. In Milwaukee, that's not as much true. You have a totally different dynamic when you have Democratic primaries within cities.
Right. They often become de facto general elections, especially let's take a look at the election in the Milwaukee County Sheriff's race. This was a Democratic primary, but it was very much a de facto general election. The incumbent and winner was David Clark, who reportedly had many Republicans crossing over to vote for him.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of an unusual, you know, it's kind of a strange phenomenon from the perspective of the kind of democracy you learn about in in grade school when you're learning about civics. It's not uncommon in urban areas, though. I'm looking to kind of compare us with what happened in Washington, D.C. and in 2012 in their primary, because that's another city where the Democratic primary is the election. And it looks like their April 2012 primary had around the same number of votes as the sheriff's race did in Milwaukee County, about 50,000 votes.
A lot had been made of the hundreds of thousands of dollars spent in this race, but I wonder if this also speaks to the priceless value of incumbency as well.
I think that that's probably true, and that name recognition is going to be really important in this kind of election where there are relatively few other information cues because it's two Democrats. At the same time, this race, I thought the sheriff's race was very heavy on information cues for a local primary. You know, you had both sides talking about Clark as the NRA candidate, which has a very kind of concise, symbolic value. It's also pretty astounding, I think, that this race attracted so much national attention. Again, I kind of go back to D.C. primaries in terms of races where you have an urban Democratic primary that attracts national attention. And I think because Wisconsin has been so much in the news in terms of national politics, and because police issues and racial issues and gun issues have been in the news so much, this race took on a kind of broader significance, and you can kind of see that in the tenor of the campaign and also, I think, in the results of the race.
Right. We had heard that that Michael Bloomberg had had contributed a lot of money to this race and essentially really tried to make it a referendum on gun laws. Is that going to be the rule more than the exception for years to come, that we're going to see these outside sources of money in things like, you know, very local, very urban races attempting to shape the results?
So I think part of that is the result of the continued relaxation of campaign finance laws over the last couple of years and last couple court decisions. I also think there's a kind of dynamic where the parties have become more deeply nationalized in the last 5 years or so, and where local and state level races have garnered national attention, where we have these kind of symbolic issues that tie areas of the country together. At the same time, I also see some countervailing forces there and some politicians who are motivated to keep issues and debates local. So I think we're going to kind of see some back and forth, but I do think that Wisconsin in particular can expect to be this kind of target of national attention when it comes to some of these kind of deeply politicized questions.
The other dynamic that many had said was at work in the sheriff's race was the influence of conservative talk radio in boosting the Clark candidacy. Is there a comparison to be made to the latter part of the 19th century when there were, say, scores of daily newspapers in every city, many of them, you know, essentially mouthpieces for a particular political viewpoint?
There certainly is a kind of dynamic where we used to have a very partisan media environment, as you said, in the 19th century. And then in the 20th century, we kind of developed this norm about more objective and removed journalism, not part of the two parties. And now we're kind of going back. I think that's a dynamic that's true across a lot of different aspects of the political system. So that might be one.
Another race that got considerable attention, at least as far as a midterm primary goes, was Assembly District 19, in which there was this four-way race on the Democratic side. The best known of the candidates was County Board Chairwoman Marina Dmitrievich, but she lost out by a couple of hundred votes to political newcomer Jonathan Brostoff. Is this perhaps a sign that name recognition is not everything, especially when you have four candidates vying?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I'm still kind of puzzling through what happened in the 19th. So, you know, my apologies for not having a quicker line. I actually don't live in the 19th, but I live very close to it. So I've been trying to observe the signage that I've been seeing and kind of where I see which signs. And I definitely saw a lot of Brostoff signs, but not as many as Dmitrievich. So, you know, that kind of is a very unscientific way to observe things, but that kind of speaks to your name recognition point. I do think that there's a kind of dynamic in the last 5 years or so, particularly, you know, as the economy hasn't been great, as the recovery hasn't been great, as the, you know, for urban areas, outcomes haven't been great, especially. While incumbency is an advantage, there are these sort of really notable moments where it's not, and where people have leaned toward the kind of new faces and new blood.
And we should note that Dmitrievich was not an incumbent in this race, but certainly an incumbent office holder that was well known in the district.
Right. That's what I mean. I'm sorry. I should have clarified. Right. So she's a kind of she's sort of mainstay. But yeah, I mean, I saw her as sort of the establishment candidate in this race. I also think I will say this as far as partisan dynamics. I think the establishment insurgent debate is pretty established. Pretty established in the Republican Party. The dynamics of that for Republicans, I think, are clear. For Democrats, they're less clear. And as we look into 2016 and, you know, going on the national level, I think that this is an issue where analysts are just starting to get a read on how Democratic voters view these issues. Democratic voters are just getting a read on kind of these questions of the establishment, heir apparent type candidates and the less experienced candidates.
So looking at the top of the ticket, Mary Burke easily won the Democratic nomination to run against Scott Walker this fall for governor. The latest polls are showing it could be a very tight race. What's your sense for how Mary Burke has done in terms of name recognition around the state? That was the rub pretty early on, that she just wasn't very well known.
That's really one of the major obstacles that she had to overcome. And the other thing that's interesting is how she positions herself as this kind of candidate who has the private sector experience with her family's company.
Well, and this was really what's interesting, I think, is this was a primary race that was kind of already determined. So I wonder if it goes against that maxim that primary candidates have to refine their message once the primaries are done. She's really been running against Scott Walker for a while, not other Democrats.
Right. And that's often how primaries have gone in the last couple of decades at the higher levels, right? The higher stakes races. Often the party sort of grooms the candidate, and anyone else who's running is just they're kind of a hanger on, and that's really I think what parties and candidates would most prefer, which again isn't very democratic, right? So I think Burke and the Democrats have been pretty focused and on message with regard to that, and I think that Burke has come up with a message that has at least helped her name recognition and kind of helped her gain some appeal in the Wisconsin electorate, which is why we're seeing such close polls.
Well, and are there storylines you think we ought to look closely at in the coming weeks as that race comes into focus?
One thing to think about is how much this is going to be a referendum on Scott Walker. That's the obvious narrative when you're running against any incumbent, especially if you're running against a very polarizing incumbent. However, Democrats will wisely be concerned about the fact that the times that they've tried to have a negative retrospective campaign against Walker back in 2012, it didn't work in the recall. So I think that there may need to be a little more emphasis on a kind of what would a Burke administration look like and give people kind of a vision of an alternative and not just, what's bad about Walker, because that's ultimately a message that through TV advertising and that kind of thing, that kind of message is often not as inspiring to get people to turn out.
Well, and you would have to think that from a competitiveness standpoint, the Walker campaign would have liked a more bruising Democratic primary electoral campaign.
I think that's quite possibly true, especially if it had been divisive. On the other hand, a bruising primary campaign can also really draw a lot of media attention, so that can actually boost name recognition for the other candidates. I think the jury's out on the impact of a divisive primary. But on the other hand, I think it's hard to say that the relative smoothness of the Burke campaign is a drawback. That really the thing that anyone who's interested in the outcome of that race ought to be thinking about is turnout. That is the major difference in Wisconsin between the political outcomes in a presidential year and a midterm year, turnout. And the groups that don't turn out in higher numbers in a midterm tend to be the groups that have a tendency to vote Democratic. Younger voters, minority voters, people of lower income. So
you would imagine between now and then the Democrats are going to undertake a fairly substantial get out the vote effort.
I think so, and I think Mary Burke has hired some good on the ground political professionals, and I think that's really the lesson of the last couple of years, and with the Obama campaign, has really been about ground game, as people call it, about sending people out into the field to register and mobilize voters and get people to the polls. It's unclear. Studies have shown different things about whether negative ads motivate people. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just affirm for people who think politics is really bad business. They just affirm that view and inspire people to stay home. So, TV ads are good for name recognition and for establishing a narrative, but having people on the ground tends to be what gets people to the polls.
A lot of interesting storylines to look ahead to. Julia Azari, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Julia Azari is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. Her most recent book is called Delivering the People's Message, The Changing Politics of the Presidential Mandate. She joined us by phone. Coming up next on the program, after a successful first run, India Fest Milwaukee looks ahead to its second year. We'll get a preview when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.